This is Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Presented by Fasig Tipton.
But it was all for Shug McGee. Super Saver wins the Derby for Todd Pletcher.
The result will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And dialed in, never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Mike Penna.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to the show Trainers Listen To. It is Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you for the next hour. As always, you are listening to the program live throughout North America on Sirius 219, XM 201, or you're tuned in to our free live streaming or the archive podcast of the show, and you're doing that on our website at horseracingradio.net. Well, today's guest, believe it or not, first joined me on Trainer Talk all the way back in 2016. And at that time, he was working as an assistant to trainer Doug O'Neill. The two had an incredible run together that included Kentucky Derby and Preakness hero I'll Have Another and multiple Breeders' Cup winner Golden Sense, among many, many other top horses. Well, in July of 2018, he made the decision to go out on his own. And the results, well, they speak for themselves. Not only has he saddled five individual graded stakes winners so far, he now has a grade one victory under his belt after Vexatious upset heavily favored Midnight Bisou in Saturday's personal ensign at Saratoga. He is trainer Jack Sisterson, and he is with me now on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. Jack, first of all, welcome to the program, my friend.
Mike, thanks for having me. Yeah, I do remember years ago. I think I came to your studio there in Lexington and
yep.
Was very fortunate for you to have me then and fortunate for you to have me on today.
Boy, what a difference 4 years makes, huh?
No, I suppose days like Saturday, I've always dreamed of. And, you know, you wake up Sunday morning and you sort of pinch yourself. And it's one of those things, I suppose, dreams can come true.
Yeah, it was a dream come true. And it was one heck of a horse race, too, Jack. Nip and tuck down to the wire. Then on top of all of that, you have to sit out and sit through an objection and an inquiry. What was going through your mind at that point?
You know, initially, obviously, I was unfortunately couldn't make it to Saratoga due to some slight back issues, which is fine now. But so I was watching it in the barn here at Keeneland. And obviously, when she crossed the finish line first, I obviously went and just thanked the guys in the barn and came back inside. So it was a few minutes after. I was obviously ongoing, and the phone started to ring. And so I initially didn't know there was an inquiry going on. So a few minutes later, I saw the inquiry sign pop up, and I thought, oh, what's going on here? So I give Mark, the assistant there at Saratoga, who's with him, thanks to Mark, obviously, actually gallops Vexatious every day back home at Keeneland and there at Saratoga. And I called Mark and just asked him exactly what was going on and spoke to Jose briefly and just said to Jose, you know, if it's unfortunate enough that we do get brought down, we will still be happy with finishing second. And thank you for a great ride that you give Vexatious. So I'm sure he was anxious during the time, because obviously he wanted to win, I wanted to win, but I just wanted to thank Jose for a great ride that he gave Vexatious. So it was an anxious moment, but fortunate it came out in our favor.
Yeah, that ride was incredible. It couldn't have been any better, and obviously it worked out in your favor. It worked out the way it was supposed to for Vexatious. Some people were shaking their heads because she was a long shot, but I think she was a long shot because she was facing champion Midnight Bisou. And many people have said, where did that performance come from? But, Jack, she ran really well in the race prior to that, too.
She did, yes, Mike. And, you know, obviously I've got a slightly biased opinion because she's our filly and mare. And so I'm going to obviously say positive things about her regardless. But if you really sit down and go through her form, it shouldn't have been that much of a shock, because you look back at last year when she ran in the Summer Colony and ran a creditable second, beat ahead to Blue Prize, you know, who went on to win the Breeders' Cup, who actually ended up beating Midnight Pursue. We thought the way she was training coming back from the good second in the Ruffian, that she could run a performance like she did last year. She does really blossom there at Saratoga, so we had that in her favour. We thought, you know, if she was to reproduce that form from last summer, she'll be there. She'll be definitely competing at the top of the stretch and giving it her all. So she did that and a little bit more on Saturday. So we weren't, obviously, going into the race, we thought as a team we were running for second, because how do you beat a champion filly like Midnight Pursue? So going into it, we were happy if we could, you know, even finish a good third, because Point of Honor is a very good filly as well. So we'd have gladly took a good third going into the race. But, you know, we were confident with our filly going over there that she wouldn't embarrass us. And she definitely didn't do that anywhere, Mike.
No, and I guess if you're going to do it, you should do it at Saratoga. That kind of ties into the whole lore of it being the graveyard of champions, and now we've seen another go down, and goes down at the hands of Vexatious. It's amazing, Jack, how a grade one victory will make all that back pain go away, huh?
You know, for a slight moment, like, this is the best medicine ever, and it's all natural. So the back's obviously feeling better each day, but they were feeling no pain on Saturday, that's for sure.
Take me through the stretch run. What was that like for you, sitting there having to watch it remotely in the barn?
You know, it was, I think during this time, you know, I would like to take the spotlight or the credit away from myself, because just to let everybody know, I've obviously had some slight back issues that held me back from doing, you know, my regular daily routine. So I've had to rely on my staff that much more, and it really goes to show you, you're only as good as the people behind you, and they've really stepped up during this time, and look what's happened. We've ended up having a grade one winner due, so credit to the staff, all the hard work that they've put in, this really goes out to them. And I'm sitting at home watching it, and you know, I didn't, the first time I ever spoke to Jose Lescano was after the race, after he hung up the phone with the stewards. I never spoke to him before the race. Most people would have thought, you know, I've spoke to him, we've, you know, went through the race. You know, that goes to show you how good a jockey Jose Lescano is. You know, he knows the competition. He knew exactly how Vexatious, he thought how she would run. And it was Jason, his agent, had text saying, Jose thinks, you know, a lot of the public didn't think she'd have a lot of, you know, natural speed early out the gate, which I thought she would, and Jose thought she would. And he told his agent, I think I'm going to jump and go forward. And if the two inside horses don't go, you'll probably find me on the lead. And if the two inside horses decide to go, I think I'll be sitting in a perfect spot in second or third. And that's what his agent texted me Saturday morning. And thanks to emojis this time, I just give him the thumbs up emoji back. And that was it, because if I was to start giving instructions, I'd only mess things up. And he had a vision in his mind how the race would pan out, and it was very similar, exactly the same how I thought, and it sort of panned out exactly that. He had a perfect trip, just sitting off motion, and I'm sitting watching it, and I thought the fractions came up. She was traveling well. Jose had her switched off and relaxed. And it was at the 3/8, Paul, I think, when Jose took a look around, when I started to think, well, wait a minute, we actually might have a chance to win this race, because he's looking around looking for Midnight Pursue. She's obviously feeling great, and he feels like he's got more left from the 3/8 to the wire. And I think I was sitting down at the time, and I actually stood up the last 3/8 because with him looking around, I thought, well, he obviously feels like there's more horse there. And from the 3/8 to the quarter pole, he kept his head in front and listening to to the announcer saying, in here comes Midnight Pursuit. That's the dreaded word we were waiting for throughout the race. And Vexation is such a competitive filly throughout a racing and in, even in a training that I thought when she headed us, Vexatious will not go down without a battle, as she showed last year against Blue Prize. And fortunately enough, we came out on top of that. It was a long enough stretch run for us, but you know, we had confidence in our filly that she wouldn't go down without a fight, and she showed that she didn't.
Well, you're not the first trainer, Jack, to come on this program and give credit to your team. And in your case, with the back issues, it's even more pertinent. Mention a couple of those folks. You mentioned your assistant at Saratoga, but there are others behind the scene who worked so hard and had a big hand in this. So let's give them some love, too. Go ahead and mention some of the others that work with you.
You know, Mike, I could sit for hours naming 100 people that have, you know, deserve more credit than I do for not only, you know, Vexatious's win, but, you know, even we had runners at Indiana, Ellis, people getting those horses to perform at that level that, you know, the three guys you have there, Mark, Felix, and Antonio, they took time moving away for 2 months to the summer to go up there, and thanks to them, I have all the guys here who've got fantastic exercise riders that do more than just ride in the barn. And I could name, you know, Connor, Roddy, Archie, John, Pascal, Brian, Gus. I've got Megan, Adam, Amber. I've got even, you know, the farm. You know, I text the farm, hey, the girls in the office there, that people don't see all the hard work and effort they put in. There, you know, Lisa, we've got Brianna, we've got Heather, we've got all the people, Eddie. It's even the tack shop. Mike Glover at Pinkston's, people, he provides all the equipment for us to be able to put on. The van companies, Marion's on at Brookledge, and to get us up there. And it's a whole team effort that, you know, when you win a race like that, it just sort of zones in on one person, and obviously it's me, but I don't want to take any credit for that because, you know, I've named a few people and I'm missing 200 more people that should have been mentioned. And it really is a team effort to get them to that point. So hopefully those guys can enjoy the success. I'd like it to read a team in the program and not my name, because they are the guys that really put forth all the hard work. You're only as good as the people behind you, and fortunate enough, I've got some very good people behind me.
Visiting with a very humble Jack Sisterson here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. It is no doubt a team effort when a horse, number one, gets to the races, and then number two, wins a race. It takes a village, as they say, and Jack has that behind him right now, and things moving in the right direction for sure. Jack, they really have been since you went out on your own in July of 2018, just over 2 years ago now, after spending all that time with Doug O'Neill. You fell into a great situation with the folks at Calumet. Take me back to that time in your life 2 years ago and the decision to make the move and go out on your own.
It was actually Doug that was said, you know, if you don't do it, I'm going to do it. Credit to Doug, you know, he's given me all this, you know, the opportunity to learn and travel with, you know, the best horses in the country. You know, we were fortunate enough, we had a little success together, and you learn things along the way. And I think, and I could be wrong, if you ask any trainer out there, what is it? And first and foremost, you have to have the horse. If you don't have the horse, you're not going to go anywhere. And the credit goes to the horse, because people ask, what do you do or what do you don't do and things like that. And I think if you ask any trainer, you have to have the horse first. And thanks to Calumet that have provided me with the horses to allow us to be in that position. You know, it was tough leaving Doug, because Doug was so, he put me in positions where I never would think I'd be in, and allowed me to travel with the best horses. But it was Doug that pushed me out there to do this, and people like him to show support in that transition. And I chat to Doug every day, and, you know, we stay in contact, and he helps me out a lot. And you know, we had Lexingtonian run at Del Mar. We just shipped him out to Doug's barn, and he took care of him for that week. And but I think it really is down to the horse. If you've got the horse that is, you know, able to compete in those or any type of race, that I just sit back and the horses will take you on the ride, that you don't really need to do anything. It's really the horses that count.
Yeah, I read a quote from Doug that said, talking about you, we miss him a ton, but he was ready, maybe even over ready, to go out on his own. He obviously had a ton of confidence in you. Jack, did you have that same kind of confidence in yourself when you were making that move?
I think with anything in life, Mike, that you sort of have to have a, you know, a bit of confidence in what you do, and, you know, because, you know, you've got people underneath you staff-wise that are sort of, you know, relying on you to make the right decision and do what's right and things like that. So you have to go into something, you know, whether it's training or whether it's, you know, playing a basketball game, or you look at all those professional athletes that go out there, perform at the highest level, and I'm sure they have to, you know, they put those jerseys on and they all have to have a bit of confidence in themselves to perform at the highest level. Again, you know, they need their teammates around them for them to be able to perform, and likewise. There's no I in team, and it's not just myself sitting in this barn. There's a whole massive staff behind everything, so I can't do it without those guys. And, you know, if I can provide just for them to be that much better in their daily work ethic and provide for the horse, you know, it all sort of molds together.
Yeah, I also read a quote from you where you said that you prefer being thrown in the deep end, and that's how you grow, and you're a firm believer in that. You said that Doug would forced you to make mistakes so that you could learn and you could grow. What's that mean? How did he do that?
You know, I'm constantly, to this day, Mike, making mistakes, and fingers crossed I'm learning from them. You know, there was times where I was unsure exactly. Yeah, I went to spend the whole winter with Doug at Oaklawn, and, you know, he wanted me to experience actually being out on my own instead of just being underneath him there in California. And, you know, there's times where you weren't sure, you know, what jockey to use or what potential race that's coming up. And you may have picked the wrong race distance-wise or the wrong jockey to suit that horse and make a mistake there. But you learn from those types of mistakes. And, you know, Doug allowed me to sort of make mistakes along the way, and you sort of he'd address it and, well, in this situation, maybe think of doing that next time and things like that. You know, there's a lot of things that go into getting that horse to be ready to run, you know, logistics-wise as well. You've got to ship horses back and forth in a van. You've got to fly horses around the country, things like that, you know, you may put one on the van instead of it might have been better flying. Just little things that I was allowed to make mistakes along the way and learn from those. And, again, I'm constantly making mistakes right now, but fingers crossed I'm learning from those.
Yeah, what are some of the things, Jack, it's a wonderful point. What are some of the things that you have learned over the past couple of years since going out on your own that, yeah, you've made a mistake or maybe things didn't go exactly the way you thought they would when you made a decision, but now you're thankful that you had that experience because it makes you even better going forward. What are a couple of those things?
You know, the more I'm getting used to this and the longer I'm doing it, is really putting in trust in the staff behind you, because you're only as good, and I know I keep saying this, of the people behind you. And if you don't have trust in them, how do you expect them in return to have trust in you to put forth that extra little help to whatever, for instance, horses they're going to hot walk or grooms, the horses are going to groom, or, you know, horses are going to feed in the afternoon and things like that. And I've learned to really build a rapport with your staff and get to know them on a personal level as well. And, you know, try to involve everybody in, you know, wins and not point fingers and be open to, you know, I'm open to criticism and, you know, try to be there for the staff if they need anything and how can I better them and things like that. And I really got that from the way Doug operated his operation in incorporating everyone. Portia, I grew up, you know, playing soccer and a whole team environment. And, you know, you learn as you grow older that how to be competitive, but at the same time, you have to be able to play as a team and perform as a team as well. So moving forward, I really put, you know, trust in my team and try to build that team rapport here at the barn. And whether it's here at Keenan or, you know, the small team we have at Saratoga or the traveling team to Ellis or Indiana or things like that, it's really, you know, as well allowing the staff to go out there and enjoy themselves as well. And, you know, for instance, on Saturday, they work harder than anyone and they need to be able to enjoy that success from Saturday. And they work 7 days a week and deserve that opportunity and being able to, you know, represent their horses that they put forth so much hard work and effort, you know, on a Saturday or Sunday when they run. So really, you know, respecting and putting trust in the staff that I have is one thing I've sort of took from Doug and implemented here, and it seems to be working out well so far.
There's another trainer who, well, things turned out pretty good for him too, Jack, and he came from organized organized team sports and took that team approach in building his operation too, and that's Hall of Famer Dwayne Lucas, and he always emphasizes the team whenever you get a chance to talk to him, and there must be something to that, to surrounding yourself with good people and letting people do their jobs and growing from there. There has to be something to that, even in this profession of training racehorses.
I think so, Mike, massively, and, you know, I could be wrong, and you know, again, I make mistakes every day, but in the operation that I run, that's going to be the way I'm going to operate moving forward, and fingers crossed we get bigger and better and grow as a team. And, you know, I know you're only as good as the people behind you, so I want the people behind me to work together as a team. And, you know, there's a few days that I may have to have a hot walker do a little extra, or a groom or a rider and things like that. And I want to build that working environment to where people will jump in and help one another and be respectful. And I really believe that you got happy staff, you have happy horses, the results really in return reflect on that. I really believe the horses really feed and sense, you know, that working environment in the barn, and I want to create that, you know, great, happy working environment so the horses sense that, so they are just, you know, happier in their daily work ethic, and basically their horses, their home. It's, we're working in the, you know, we walk into the barn and that's home for the horses that we have, and respect, treat the barn as if you were going home into your living room. And, you know, unfortunately enough, that's what our guys do at the barn. They respect one another. They respect the barn they're in. They respect the horses. And in return, you know, the results seem to pop up when we sort of least expect it because of those guys working so hard.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, you are the head coach. You're the boss. It's your final decision. You have the final say on anything that comes up throughout the week, throughout the months, as you're training a specific horse. And we talked about learning from your mistakes, Jack, but how about, you've obviously made enough right moves to saddle 5 individual grade one winners and a graded stakes winner and a grade one winner so far. How about a right move that you have made that sticks out to you that you say, you know what, boy, I made this call. We said we were going to do it this way. We did, and it worked out perfectly just the way we thought it would. Let's spin it that way. Tell me about one of those right moves.
God, I dislike doing that, Mike, because it sort of focuses on myself. But
it's always really easier to remember the mistakes, right?
Just to win on Saturday. Well, sorry, Mike, what was that?
I said it's always easier to remember the mistakes that you make than it is the triumph sometimes.
I suppose Saturday was a perfect example of, you know, we really put trust and faith in Vexatious because of her past performances and her training leading up to the personal incident, that we were going back and forth of where to... I should go back, actually, if her end of her five-year-old career, that thanks to Calumet allowed, you know, me to keep her in training in her six-year-old career. And we tried to map out a plan for every horse, whether it's Vexatious or whether it's, you know, any two-year-old we have. You know, we tried to map out a plan and work back. And we really mapped out with her. She was just coming back off a layoff, and we had her down at Fairgrounds briefly. And we thought, let's map out a summer campaign. She really likes to be at Saratoga, so let's try and get her to peak in the middle of Saratoga. So how do we do that? And what's best for Vexatious to be able to peak midsummer? And we sat down as a team and we thought, well, the way I train, they take time. Two-year-olds don't win, well, three-year-old, whatever. We don't win first time out, nor do we win off a layoff, just because we run them to get fit, not train them. So we thought, well, let's, you know, we've got probably 2 months until she's, you know, 75% fit. What races would come available to get her back to the race? It was Auckland at the time, and there was an allowance race. And so we thought, you know, let's get her back in an allowance spot. She's better than an allowance horse, but it gets her going. And then we ran her back to the allowance at Churchill, and we had bigger and better goals for Vexatious, and she didn't win those two allowance races, but we had Saratoga in our back of our minds for Vexatious to hopefully she'll keep improving and peak at the summertime. And she ran, thanks to Declan Cannon, a good race. He looked after it at Oaklawn, and then Florent rode her in a tough allowance mile in 3/8 at Churchill. And she gained fitness along the way to where it was time for us to step her up in the Ruffian. And she ran a great race in the Ruffian, second to Monomoy Girl, you know, the highest buyer. She ran 100 buyer. And then you think, it was time to go. She left Belmont to go straight to Saratoga. And, you know, she was eligible for the Summer Colony still, because that race is for horses that haven't won, I believe, a graded stake, 2020. I think that's a condition of the race. So she's eligible for that race.
Wow.
And you've got a filly that could be probably the favourite because of a second to Monomoy Girl and the Ruffian. I don't know what other filly in the country. Obviously, we would have respected any filly in the Summer Colony, but at the same time, I think she might have had the fastest buyer going into it, and probably the best resume going into a race like that. Or do you go the sort of the hard route and try the grade one personal ensign? And, you know, thankfully, the owner left that decision up to the barn. And it wasn't a tough decision, Mike, because we really let Vexatious answer that. You go back, it was coming back in 3 weeks if we decided to. I think the Summer Colony runs this week. So it was either coming back 3 weeks or 3 weeks and a couple of days. And the easy option was to opt for the easy race with her. But we put confidence in Vexatious to where she was training great. She came out of it great. She breezed just an easy half a mile, which she always does, at Saratoga in between. And we made, I suppose you go back, I do make the final decision, but I did discuss with a lot of people in the barn, and I said, you know what, discussed with Jason Jose Lescano's agent. You know, he was part of the victory as well, because, you know, he had confidence in Vexatious, but the decision was made to skip the Summer Colony and let's give the grade one a shot. And I suppose it wasn't any grade one's tough.
Yeah, that worked out pretty well, Jack.
You take on a grade one. with a champion in there that's 1-9, it just makes that grade one just a little bit tougher. But we made that decision, and we were confident with the way we had Vexatious prepped for the personal incident, to where we didn't think she would embarrass us. And again, it goes back to, you got to have that little bit of confidence, because, you know, if my staff is not confident in me, I think they're not going to put forth their best effort. And if they have a little confidence, I don't know if they're confident in me or not. Like, you'd have to ask them that. But I have to really, you know, show them a bit of confidence, because I wanted them to walk in August the 1st, Saturday morning, and walk into Vexatious' stall and then show confidence in the filly to be running that afternoon.
And they did. So, Jack, hold on one second. We're up against the break here. Let me get to this break. We're going to come back. Hold that thought. We'll come back and continue this conversation. Jack Sisterson, my special guest on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton.
Well, Fasig's family, basically. Some of the guys that work here I've known for 30 years. I just felt really supported, and they're great communicators. They try to help in whatever you do.
Fasig Tipton's has a sale for every market, every segment in the industry. There's multiple opportunities where you're going to have plenty of good buying and selling situations.
Great customer service. I'm not only a buyer with them, but I'm a seller, and I've always been well taken care of.
There's a lot of different things that sometimes you need at a sale, and Fasig Tipton is there every step of the way.
They show year after year that they're ethical and they're fair, and they enjoy what they do. But when you're around people that have a combination of all those things, you know, you can't lose.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
It's Vexatious and Midnight Bizou. They are 1-2 at the top of the stretch, with Point of Honor moving into third. Motion to Motion down on the inside. Vexatious narrowly. Midnight Bizou on the outside. It's Midnight Bizou and Vexatious, and the champ is challenged here. Midnight Bizou, Vexatious, the two of them come down to the finish in the grade one personal ensign, and it's going to be Vexatious to win it by a head. Vexatious pulls off the upset. Midnight Bizou was second. And farther back, Point of Honor finished third. The mile and a furlong. 1:48.45.
Welcome back. Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna visiting with trainer Jack Sisterson here on the show. He's fresh off his first grade one victory in the personal ensign at Saratoga. And that's the call right there from John Embriel, who brought them home, holding off heavily favored champion Midnight Bizou, but the graveyard of champions claimed another, if you will, as Vexatious took care of business and held off Midnight Bizou and everybody else for the victory. And we've been talking about that in the first half of the show. If you missed it, well, just head back to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can listen to the full hour. It's there for you to listen to at your leisure. horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on Apple Podcasts. Another way to get a hold of the HRN podcast, if you want to do it that way. Jack, boy, what a special moment that was. We talked about it at length in the first half of the program. You think about Calumet Farm, and you think about so many of the greats that have come through there, going all the way back to, say, Whirlaway, for example, and Citation and those horses. But for you to train for an organization like Calumet, what's that like?
Oh, it's fantastic. Yeah, I grew up dreaming of just being in just the business at some sort of small level. And, you know, I grew up playing soccer back in England, and you got your Manchester United sort of dominant and things like that. And so you look at this business and you see all the fantastic farms and owners and trainers, and you sort of Google Calumet and the history that pops up behind them. You thought, wow, wouldn't it be cool to train a horse for them one day? And how do you get to that point? I have no idea. You got to take care of your daily obligations, and maybe one day you might get lucky enough to be able to be associated with them at some sort of level. So very fortunate to be able to train one horse for them, never mind a couple, with the history and the success behind the farm.
Calumet is one of the few farms remaining in the Bluegrass that still have the white fences lining the paddocks and the pastures along those rolling hills. It's right next to Keeneland. So for folks that have never been and they come to Keeneland, they'll want to make sure they get a chance to drive by Calumet, and you can't miss it. Do you remember the first time that you went through the red gates and they opened up and you drove back there to the office and to the stallion complex there?
Yeah, I was sort of going through my mind. It's like, what am I supposed to say here? I'm just, I'm nobody now. And what do I, how to present my, you know, make sure my shirt's tucked in. And I don't know if I had I had a baseball cap on at the time. Like, I probably should take this off, but I'd been working at the barn, so my hair's a mess and just trying to look presentable as possible. And I'd probably look like a mess walking in there. So hopefully, you know, I represent them well at the moment, and but just very fortunate for the opportunity they've given me.
All right, let me do this with you. Let's have a little fun. I mentioned five individual graded stakes winners that you've had the privilege to train so far. Of course, we talked about Vexatious in the first half of the program. People can go back and listen to that at horseracingradio.net. But let me say a name and you tell me the story.
Okay.
Oxy Lady.
It's great, you know, been involved in an operation that I'm involved with, because I get to witness, and most people don't see, what goes on behind the scenes of all the hard work with the farm, the guys at the yearling division, the foal division, the mare division, and she's a homebred. And for guys at the farm, I got numerous texts from everybody at the farm when they say, even, you know, I get texts from this, how supportive they are. They follow everything. So when a homebred comes to me, they've got so much hard work and sweat equity invested into that horse, or numerous horses. I've got several homebreds in the barn. So a horse filly like Vexatious going up to Aqueduct and running Attempted, it's extra special for guys at the farm, because they foaled her, they weaned her, they walked her, they did more work than I did with her. So for them, that was a special win, because she was a homebred, and, you know, I remember it was Breeders' Cup Friday. For me, it was special because my brother Liam was over visiting from England, and every day, he's reading, every entry we have and every result, and unfortunately, there's not too many wins in there, so I can't do him too proud, but we went up there. Noxy Lady was a long shot, but he was able to fly up there with me. And so having a family member there that is so supportive, and, you know, we lose most of the time, but the few times we win, he was actually there to experience it. And, you know, I wanted to do him proud, but then I know he actually watched her work the week before we sent her up there. And it was first time blinkers, and she responded well. Declan Cannon, thanks to Declan, who sort of put up with me and the horses I've put him on. I think it was Declan's first grade stakes win as well. And Declan came out to breeze her at Keene, and she breezed extremely well. And she broke a maiden at Belterra. We tried to get her in the Alpha Buys at Keene, and unfortunately she couldn't get in. And she finished a good third in a tough allowance race at Keene, and to where she held her own against tough competition. And we thought, you know what, let's give her a shot in a grade three, you know, one turn mile at Aqueduct. It was Breeders' Cup Friday. I remember putting the saddle on, and she might have been 12 or 15 to 1. I think 12 to 1 as I was sort of finished saddling her, and Brother Liam was standing next to me. Declan walked down. There was a huge change in the odds. And my brother looked at me and was like, Jack, sort of, what are you, you're 36 to 1 now. Well, it was... I think Jay Walker just won the Breeders' Cup Juvenile at Churchill, and the filly that was the favourite in the Tempted, I think Barclay Tag trained her, had just finished second behind Jay Walker. So naturally the public obviously had saw that in the PPs, and the odds changed massively that filly went onto a massive odds on shot. We drifted out, and you sort of worry when you sort of that sort of price. Have I put them in the wrong spot? But we have faith. Again, it goes back to the staff getting Oxalady to run at that highest level, and you have to show confidence in, because I couldn't go into that paddock showing any sort of weakness, because I firmly believe the staff feed off it, the horses sense it, and so we still had confidence in her. It was a very foggy day at Aqueduct, and you couldn't see anything. You know, you heard, they're off, they break, and you could barely see it, and the next thing, you know, I thought at the 3/8, Paul Declan had her in a great spot, and next thing I know, she pops up in front of me, my brother jumps, we've won. So we couldn't actually see because it was that foggy, but that was a special one. It was our first graded stakes win, and Declan flew up thanks to Declan Cannon, who's a great jockey who helps me out a lot. And there's a lot of jockeys that do. Adam Biscuits had been on her, and you know, I'm fortunate for jockeys coming in and helping me, and they don't get the credit all the amounts that they should, but those guys have helped me out along the way. But Oxalady, I know I'm going on about, it was special because my brother Liam was there to experience it. Obviously, he was my first graded stakes winner from a homebred, and the farm was all watching. So that was extra special winning with a homebred.
You know, Jack, you can hear the passion when you talk about these horses and the people that work with you and have helped you along the way. We've established the fact that you're a very humble guy. I think people can hear that in the show so far. Do you get emotional at moments like that when you achieve something so special? Do you allow yourself to get emotional?
Yeah. Like, for instance, Saturday, I'm in the barn watching it, and I've got the cameras on, and you sort of, you know, we've got all the staff working so hard in the barn, and they're taking time to watch and root. It's obviously vexatious at the time. You know, my feelings go out for them because I want to do what's right and do them proud. And, you know, we get beat, unfortunately, quite a bit. And just to see the emotions on their face and the excitement and things, it makes it, you know, you can, you know, feel for them. And they work 7 days a week and long hours and things like that. And I want to do it for them as well as obviously the owners and the horses and things like that. And I'm blessed to have a supportive family behind me. And I FaceTime my family right after the race. And you know what parents can get like at times, they can be emotional. And I FaceTime them quick, and they were very emotional. Mom and dad, my sisters, my brother and everything. And I just don't want to embarrass them. If I can live life and not embarrass my family, I want to say I've lived a successful life. And, you know, thankfully, they support me. And it can be an emotional seeing them happy, Mike. So to answer that question, yeah, it can be an emotional time because seeing them so happy and supportive of what you're doing, it, you know, makes you feel well in the life you live in.
Visiting with trainer Jack Sisterson here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Jack, let me throw another name at you, and you can tell me the story of this horse, too. Another Calumet homebred, as a matter of fact, Coach Whip.
She was a great filly, you know. She, and thanks to the facility we have at Keene, and we have paddocks, and we really trained her out of the paddock. She was slightly on the high string side and very energetic, and all she wanted to do is get out of a stolen train and things like that. So we turned her out a lot and tried to get her mind off actually the fast-paced, you know, training style and try to slow her down as much as possible. So thanks to the paddock for now allowing her to get her mind off things and relax and really conserve her energy for the afternoons. And she was a talented filly if I could manage her in the right way. And thanks, I know it might not sound right for the regular training sort of system, but we left her in the paddock, you know, most of the day and brought her inside to put the saddle on and to run her. And that worked out well because she went on to win the Arlington Matron for us. But again, she was a homebred, and she's actually fortunate. She retired sound, and she's on the farm now. And again, just seeing the farm follow her success and being able to get a little bit of black type with her was exciting.
Let's stick with the homebred theme and tell me about Lexingtonian.
That was, he's been an exciting horse. You know, on paper, when he first ran for us, he might not have jumped off the page for you if you were looking at his form, but I thought he ran visually a lot better race than actually the paper suggests. So I asked the farm, hey, he ran Kentucky Derby Day last year, and it was coming back, obviously, the Preakness in 2 weeks, and Lexingtonian, he'll tell you when he wants to run. He's a ball full of energy, and he's kicking the stall down the week of the Preakness, and I had him nominated for the Chick Lang, but, you know, I want to do what's right by the horse and give them ample amount of time in between races. But he was showing a sign that race at Churchill never really took much out of him. So it was the last minute I called the farm quick and got their approval and asked them, it might sound crazy, but do you mind if I run him back in 2 weeks in the Chick Lang? It's straight 3 year olds and it's a sprint, and you might be able to get lucky and pick up some pieces and get some black type. And they give me the confidence to put him on a van, and it was great. Obviously, it's Preakness Day. There's a lot of people there. It's an exciting week of racing, and I had a lot of friends there that were there with, you know, by Dan Blacker, Simon Callahan, they flew in, you know, for the sales. Ben McElroy, Brittany Erden, she was working on the TV. So I know I'm missing a lot of people, but they were all there, and for them to show so much support for me, obviously, those guys are working busy, and Simon and Dan have horses to train for themselves, and Ben's got a big sale coming up too that he's constantly, you know, got his mind on the catalogs, and they all came down to the winner's circle for me, and it was just, again, showing support. To me, that was a fun win because I had a lot of good friends with me there in the winner's circle that day.
Yeah, so special. It's a special industry, too. That support that you get across the board in this industry is almost unparalleled. One more. How about Bandua?
Bandua is, you know, he's taken me places that, again, I wouldn't have been able to, and I don't mind saying it, afford to go. You know, really, I suppose you have to have money to travel and or have the opportunities of traveling. Thanks to Bandua, he's taken me places. You know, he loves going to Arlington. My mum came 1 year that we ran him in at Woodbine at the end of the year race, and we sent up there. And my mum and I, we traveled up there, and we got to see Toronto for the first time. And that was special because I got to travel with her. And, he didn't run so well. It was probably towards the end of his year, and he'd had a long season, and we'd give him time off, and we brought him back, and he was a good second to Synchrony. First off a layoff at Fairgrounds, and we all know what Synchrony can do. He ran a good second to led us to believe that he'd have a great career here in the US, and fast forward, he was a great third in the Arlington Million, and he won the prep, the Arlington Handicap, and I still have him. We give him a little. He took us to the Breeders' Cup. I keep forgetting, you know, the biggest stage of the world in horse race. He took me out there, my first Breeders' Cup runner, and that's exciting just to have a runner in there. Thanks to Bandua for allowing me that opportunity. I still have him. He's had a little break after the Breeders' Cup, and unfortunately, we had a sort of an Arlington summer campaign mapped out for him, because he liked Arlington so well that didn't work out. And we firmly believe Bandua is a horse that is still mature, and if that sounds right, you know, he's an older horse, but he has a big frame to him, and he's sort of still filling out that we think he could be good as a 6, 7, 8 year old. So if we do what's right by him and, you know, give him a little break, which we are, and he's still in the barn, I'm looking at him right now, that he'll only have a he'll continue to be successful here in the U.S.
Trainer Jack Sisterston here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Jack, in the first half of the show, we spent time talking about Doug O'Neill and what he meant to you and to your career, and he certainly played a major role in getting you to where you are today. You also spent time around trainers like Todd Pletcher and Eddie Keneally. Tell me about a couple of the things that you have taken away, or the one thing maybe that you've taken away from each of those individuals as you've observed them and watched them and been around them that is helping you with your operation today.
You know, first and foremost, all three are fantastic horsemen and trainers, and thanks to them for allowing me an opportunity to walk into their barn. I remember the first year, I think it was the year of, I know the year it was, but the actual year itself, it was Rags to Riches won the Oaks and Octave was second, and Todd had five runners in the Derby the following day. That I walked into that shed run in Todd's barn and was new to the American side of racing. I didn't know much, and so it's an exciting week. Todd's got a whole barn full at Churchill, and Rags to Riches, Octave, English Channel was there, Scat Daddy, Any Given Saturday. I could name the whole shed row was all grade one type of horses. And to look back now, I mean, I've got numerous English Channels that I trained myself, and 15 years ago I was hot walking him. And thanks to that, he's had such a big influence and will continue to have such a big influence in the industry, and I was able to be a small part of that as a hot walker, and Todd allowed me to gradually build up to then go to Eddie's barn. And with Eddie, you know, obviously been from Ireland and a great horseman, and you know, Eddie had Kelly's Land at the time, a great sprinter, and the success he had with him, and just allowing to be just a small part of big operations like that made me feel very fortunate to just be able to wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning and want to go to work and want to do that little extra and things like that, to where maybe in the long run that might benefit you. And all three were stepping stones to where I am right now, and if it wasn't for those guys, I wouldn't be hearing it. I think it really is a small industry. You know, from an outside person looking in, you don't see exactly what goes on behind the scenes. And, you know, last Saturday, we sort of, like sports, you might have some friends that play on different teams, but on that Saturday, you put your game face on and you might be friends with them, but believe me, you want to win at the same time. And, you know, people, Steve Asmussen has texted me twice, and people don't see this, of congratulating me on Saturday's win. And, you know, that's, no one sees that but myself. And for Steve, for me, somebody who's no one in the business, to get a text from, obviously, Steve finishing second with the champion, goes to show how, one, obviously, how successful Steve is, but how, you know, somebody who's sort of young and trying to be like somebody like Steve, getting a text from him, two texts saying congratulations means a lot. That obviously Doug texts me as well, and Todd Pletcher texts me, Graham Motion, Jimmy Jerkins, Brendan Walsh, Michael McCarthy, I could name Dan Blacker, Simon Callahan. I'm missing hundreds of people that I run against that, you know, that I want to beat. And I'm going to lie to people and say, well, oh, we're friends, I'll let you win. I want to win, but at the same time, you win a race and you get congratulative texts from competitors. It's a great industry. Owners that, ironic, Jeff Bloom texts congratulations to own Midnight Pursuit or Coombe, and you know, all these people that own horses and invest millions are texting me congratulations, which it really goes to show you what a great industry we work in.
What was a bigger thrill for you, the text messages you received from all of those people or the message you got from me asking you to come on the show today?
That's a hard, you know, thanks to people like you, Mike, you know, you've got bigger and better things to do than, you know, sitting with me and probably boring you for an hour. So it does really mean a lot to for you asking me to come on your show. You know, I'm nobody and you've taken time to listen to me for an hour, and it's very appreciative, and I'm honored to be able to chat to you.
I'm kidding, Jack. Of course, I'm joking, but trust me, you refer to yourself as nobody, and you have to keep in mind, guys like Bill Mott at one point couldn't get stalls at certain racetracks because of the fact that his horses weren't good enough. And that story resonates throughout so many of the top trainers that we see today. But you're well on your way, my friend. A grade one winner, 5 individual greatest stakes winners to your credit so far in a very short time span. Well done. We're down to the final 2 minutes or so of the program, so I always like to wrap it up and ask you to let people know something about you that maybe we haven't touched on yet. Maybe another hobby. You mentioned the fact that you were a soccer player. You played at the University of Louisville. What other things do you enjoy doing outside of racing, Jack, in about a minute or so?
Yeah, I enjoy, you know, fortunate I've got some great friends and support from them, and I'm constantly in contact and hanging out with those, and I enjoy to read. You know, you've got to invest in yourself sometimes, and the more I can read and, you know, gain knowledge along, you know, valuable texts and things like that, I enjoy reading at the same time to better my knowledge, and hopefully I can learn just a little bit to pass on to the people around me.
Yeah, well, you've done a remarkable job, my friend, and again, can't be happier for your success. You've done it the right way. You've worked your tail off, and I know that there are bigger and even better things up the road, but congratulations on that grade one victory this past weekend, and all the best moving forward, and keep it rolling, Jack.
Thank you very much, Mike, and thanks for spending the hour with me.
Yeah, he's trainer Jack Sisterson here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Dipton. Fantastic visit. If you are just joining me right now and you missed this particular program or any portion, go over to our website, horseracingradio.net. Do yourself a favor and check out the podcast of this show. You won't be disappointed. It's all there, horseracingradio.net. And, of course, you can follow us on social media at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, and on Instagram. My thanks to my producer, Lee Delapina, in our Lexington studio, and my thanks to my special guest, Jack Sisterson. You've been listening to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. I'm Mike Penna. Thanks for listening.